start hearing the shaking and the rumbling. Yeah. So I ran out barefoot and it's kind of coming down right behind me.
A landslide damages homes and causes power outages in Juneau. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, September 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Stephen Downs is sentenced for murdering Sophie Sergey nearly 30 years ago.
With regard to murder in the first degree, the court imposes a sentence of 67 years time to serve.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are a hunter, birder, or outdoor enthusiast, the U.S. Geological Survey is asking for help tracking the bird populations in Alaska. The USGS manages a nationwide bird banding program, and every year, thousands of birds are marked with small, numbered leg bands. If you see, find, or harvest a banded bird, please report the band number online at reportband.gov. The information provided will help inform how bird populations may be changing. This message sponsored by the USGS Alaska Science Center.
A landslide in downtown Juneau last night, triggered by record rainfall, damaged three homes, prompted the evacuation of a dozen residents, and caused power outages. Meteorologists from the National Weather Service had cautioned that landslides were possible earlier in the day, but no major warnings were issued. KTOO's Claire Strempel visited the scene of the slide as people evacuated and has this story.
Okay, we're evacuating this area right now for a potential mudslide.
The fire truck is blocking Gastineau Avenue, and first responders are going door to door asking residents to evacuate.
Is it voluntary or we need to leave?
It's voluntary.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Some are staying, some are going. Alanita Danner is looking for her 80-year-old mom.
So she's on the other, have you tried to call her?
I have. She's, you know what, she's outside. She's locked out right now.
You can't get through there.
She can't get to her because a large spruce tree came down across the road.
Yeah, my mom called and she said that my aunt's house was in the road.
Part of her aunt's house is underneath the tree. There's significant damage, but no one was inside. Danner's mom was able to evacuate down a stairwell and meet her daughter downtown. The tree blocking the road is also on top of Evan Hartung's truck. It came down from above the house where he lives. Hartung was watching television when he realized he needed to get out.
Yeah. Then, you know, start hearing the shaking and the rumbling.
You guys are good.
So I ran out barefoot and it's kind of coming down right behind me.
He's wearing his neighbor's cut-off extra tufts and a wool shirt. Rain is dripping off his beard. He's lived in this apartment for 4 years. He said the 2020 slide in Haines was on his mind when he heard the rumbling.
Just glad it wasn't a little bit to the side. That would have been my house.
So it didn't hit your house?
Just my stairway, for the exit.
Sarah Wallace and her partner live in the unit next to Hartung.
So when we looked out the window, we saw him running out without any shoes. And then my partner and I grabbed both of our cats and ran out. And then I ran back in for a second to grab us coats and... Yeah, we've been out here ever since.
Do you guys know where you're going next?
Yeah, I think so. Devil's Club.
Devil's Club.
They plan to stay with friends after swinging by the brewery to decompress. Their landlord, Terry Schwartz, says the tree missed his house, but the house isn't fine.
Well, there's another house on top of it right now.
Schwartz was finishing dinner at his home in North Douglas when he got the news. He says he feels sad.
I'm sad for the folks that live there. And I hope that we can get this cleaned up real quick. I'm also glad that Jin wasn't in his house, the guy above us. And I hope this gets resolved quickly.
The city is asking people to stay at least a block away. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
People who left Gastineau Avenue after Monday's landslide can return home now, the city and borough of Juneau said this afternoon. But they're asking everyone else to stay away for now. Tom Matisse, Juneau's emergency programs manager, said one home was completely destroyed by the slide and two more were damaged. Many homes on the street still do not have power and there's no timeline for restoring it. Matisse said people will have to decide on their own when they feel safe to return.
We can't tell them when it's safe or when it's not safe, but with no rain over the last 12 hours, the hazard is definitely declining, and this hazard is a channelized, localized hazard.
Matisse said the city is still assessing whether it will need to do anything to stabilize the slide area. Taylor Sossin with the Red Cross said 12 people came to the emergency shelter after the landslide. They were given hotel vouchers for the night. Sossin said the slide was a reminder that everyone should be ready to go in case of an emergency.
You know, it's really a good idea to make sure
that you have an evacuation kit or an emergency kit somewhere in your home, so that if you have to evacuate at a moment's notice, you're not, you know, spending those precious moments that you could be getting to safety packing, you know, items that you may need.
The city says that debris removal could take several days. The man convicted of a cold case murder and rape from 1993 was sentenced in Fairbanks Superior Court yesterday. Stephen Harris Downs was sentenced to 75 years in prison for the rape and murder of Sophie Sergey in a college dorm bathroom. KUAC's Robin reports.
The case baffled investigators for decades and became notorious because of the circumstances. A young woman stabbed and shot while she was visiting friends at college in Fairbanks in April 1993. No one had enough evidence to give Alaska State Troopers a solid suspect. In 2018, DNA science provided a breakthrough. A tiny sample on the victim was matched to Stephen Downs, who was living in Bartlett Hall that semester, one floor up from where the victim was found.
The murder and rape took place in a woman's restroom on the UAF campus in the woman's floor of a dormitory. But this is the location Mr. Downs chose to invade and commit his crimes.
Superior Court Judge Thomas Temple presided over the trial last January. He listened Monday to pre-sentence reports from prosecutor Jenna Gruenstein and defense attorney James Hawanek. Gruenstein asked the judge to consider certain factors to influence a longer sentence, the use of multiple weapons in the crime, both a knife and a gun, as well as using a murder to prevent the reporting of a sexual assault.
So in this case, the court has very wide discretion in the murder in the first degree sentence, you know, 20 to 99 years to impose.
The judge said he would use the 1993 sentencing guidelines.
To the charge of sexual assault in the first degree, the court is required by law to impose exactly an 8-year term of incarceration, according to the laws in effect in 1993.
Defense attorney Hawanek asked the judge to consider Stephen Downs' health and approach the sentencing from a more practical approach.
Steve is 48 years old now. He's over 400 pounds. He's got very high blood pressure. I think that his life expectancy is not going to be 103 years old here. Anything in excess of a 20-year sentence, that's going to be bringing him to the end of his life under the best of circumstances.
Downs attended University of Alaska Fairbanks from 1992 to 96. He lived in Arizona for a while and then returned to his home state of Maine. Both the state and the defense noted that Downs had no criminal record before and no criminal activity since.
He became a nurse who cared for hundreds, if not thousands, of patients. He was on Dean's List multiple semesters for the remainder of his 4 years at UAF and then went on without a criminal history for the next 30 years.
The victim's brother, Alexei Sergey, was on the phone from Western Alaska before Monday's hearing began, but the call was dropped before he could testify about the effects his sister's death had on his family. Stephen Downs himself did not say anything at the hearing. Hawanek says Downs maintains that he's innocent of the crimes.
With regard to murder in the first degree, the court imposes a sentence of 67 years time to serve. The court is imposing the 8 years of time for the sexual assault consecutive to the 67 years for murder in the first degree. The composite sentence is going to be 75 years.
Under Alaska law, if Downs has no problems in prison, he can be released after he serves one-third of his sentence or 25 years. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Kenai forager's guide to berry picking this fall.
And they make the most beautiful Thanksgiving cranberry sauce ever. I haven't bought cranberry sauce in so many years.
That's right. We've got cranberries coming up. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
A former Alaska state trooper has been named as the state's new lead on solving cases involving missing and murdered Indigenous people. State officials announced today that Lonnie Piscoya started on the job September 19th, replacing Ann Sears, who retired last month. According to the Department of Public Safety, Sears, quote, decided to go back into retirement and to spend more time with her family, end quote. Piscoya is Inupiaq and was born and raised in Nome. He served in trooper posts spanning from Galena to Ketchikan, rising to lieutenant. Piscoya says he decided to come out of retirement when Public Safety Commissioner James Cockrell called and personally asked him for his help on the state's Missing and Murdered Indigenous People initiative.
You know, there are quite a few of them that I had known or knew their last names because I'm an Alaska Native myself.
Piscoya says he's started the new job by reviewing information from old cases, and he says he has specific goals.
That case is the goal to solve cases and get them through the adjudication process and find closure to, and give closure to some of these family members associated with that case. So that's the goal.
Piscoya says the state is planning to hire a tribal liaison and may eventually be able to fund a few more investigators to address the cases. The Anchorage Assembly has approved using the Sullivan Arena, again, as an emergency homeless shelter. The hockey arena had been used as a shelter for roughly 2 years before Mayor Dave Bronson closed it at the end of June. The return to using the arena as a shelter comes after more than a month of debate over how to house roughly 350 homeless people through the winter. Whether or not the mayor will implement the winter plan is still up in the air. The plan, approved by the Assembly Monday night, would put more than $2.4 million towards sheltering at the Sullivan, as well as extending services at several existing shelters. It also provides 85 housing units at the former Golden Lion Hotel. The Assembly approved the plan in a 9-1 vote with Eagle River member Jamie Allard opposed. West Anchorage Assembly member Felix Rivera spoke in favor of the plan and addressed the need to have more permanent solutions for homelessness moving forward.
We can focus on the larger picture, on housing and supports, on mental health, on substance misuse treatment, we will be able to form a path out of this permanent emergency state.
Ahead of debate on the resolution, Rivera asked Bronson whether he would make a good faith effort to implement the plan quickly. Here was the mayor's response.
There's a lot to go through here. This is a complex plan. We have a lot of work to do in analysis with legal. So to your specific question, I simply can't answer it in good faith tonight. Thank you.
In August, the Assembly formed a task force to create a winter sheltering plan, expressing frustration at the lack of a plan from the mayor. The Bronson administration has since released a sheltering plan. At tonight's regular meeting, Assembly members will vote on a city code change that would allow for one part of the mayor's plan, the use of portable buildings for shelter. In the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District, an annual school climate survey found that African American students rated their schools lower than other student groups did. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The American Institute of Research developed School Climate Survey asked participants how they feel about statements related to three domains: school engagement, school safety, and school environment. Fairbanks North Star Borough School District results were summarized at a recent school board meeting by district research analyst Ellis Ott, who highlighted a race-correlated difference in the survey responses.
I did find that African-American student group had the lowest positive rate than other demographic groups for all three domains.
Ott said a similar difference was evident in the responses from African-American school staff.
Even larger differences between the positive rates between African-American staff and non-African-American staff.
The findings drew concern and comments from some school board members. Tria Sanderson said the student survey result is in line with experiences.
Just recently, a young African-American student achieved some athletic achievement and was told their hair had to be straightened. Not acceptable. So when your report flags these things, I believe it's dead on, and I believe we still have work that must be done.
Fellow board member Maggie Matheson recounted a school incident involving her own child.
My son was called a monkey at school, and nothing really happened to this teacher. I took it to the diversity committee, I took it to the EEOC, and nothing happened. It took her months to apologize to my son.
Asked what the district can do to address the issue, Assistant Superintendent Luke Meinert said the survey data is an important starting point for conversations.
Ensuring that specifically our African-American students know that they're supported and loved and that they've got safe places that they can go to talk with staff members and get the supports that they need.
The American Institute of Research developed survey also queries parents about school engagement, safety, and environment, but not enough parents responded to provide informative results. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The U.S. Forest Service is proposing the harvest of up to 9 square miles of young-growth timber on Prince of Wales Island. It's part of a years-long transition away from old-growth logging in the Tongass National Forest, and some in the timber industry worry they'll be left behind. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
One of the project's main goals is to provide local mills with 3 years' worth of timber. That would mean harvesting about 5,800 acres over 15 years. It's a haul worth somewhere between $7 and $10 million. The agency says the Thorne Bay Basin Integrated Management Project would be a much-needed boost to Prince of Wales Island's timber sector. Chris Nicholson owns Fair and Square Lumber in Kaufman Cove. He says he's a fan of the plan.
I really support the transition to second growth as soon as possible.
He says the younger trees are easier on his equipment, and he says they don't have as many imperfections. That means he doesn't waste as much turning the logs into lumber.
When it comes to the amount of time it takes setting up to do the milling and the amount of waste that you get, extra waste, and for a small milling operation, that's huge. There's enough waste as it is, let alone defect waste.
But Nicholson acknowledges that a transition toward younger trees will be a challenge for many in the timber industry.
It's going to be hard on those mills whose business plan is sort of organized around cutting especially red cedar.
The timber industry has long been geared toward old growth, and there's plenty of demand. Old growth Sitka spruce, for example, is prized by musical instrument manufacturers for its acoustic properties. But in recent years, the federal government has pushed to transition Tongass logging towards young growth. The Obama administration revised a key planning document in 2016 to require the Forest Service to move away from old-growth timber sales. And shortly after taking office, President Joe Biden's administration announced a freeze on old-growth timber sales in the Tongass. Conservationists say moving towards young growth helps protect habitat for things like deer, salmon, and wolves, and helps fight climate change. But some in the region are skeptical that young growth can sustain Southeast Alaska's dwindling timber sector. Jay Cohn owns JK Forest Products in Thorne Bay and says there's just not enough young growth to keep mills like his in business.
Probably put half the mills on the island out of business, if not all the mills on the island out of business.
Even now, Cohn says he can't rely on a steady supply of it.
It's sporadic and very competitive.
He does agree that old growth has more imperfections, but says those trees make a better finished product.
The young growth tends to have less defects in the wood. However, the young growth itself is a less mature wood, and the visual cues are not there. It's not as visual pleasing, and the longevity of the wood isn't there. It's just not as pretty wood. It's not the same seller. It looks more like a piece of plywood.
Timber is only one part of the Thorne Bay Basin project. Other plans outlined in the proposal include planting native plants, restoration work on creek beds that are home to fish, and pre-commercial thinning to keep the environment healthy for wildlife. The project would also add 6 miles of new temporary roads and 1 mile of permanent Forest Service system road while cleaning up 42 miles of existing roads on Prince of Wales Island. The public comment period for the Thorne Bay Basin Project is open until October 21st. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 45 years of Alaska operations. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
healthcare providers are gearing up for free Omicron booster clinics throughout Southeast Alaska. The first large-scale one happened Friday in Petersburg, where medical staff and residents filled the community gym. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning stopped by and has this story.
Hi there.
Hey.
Fancy seeing you here.
Oh, you wore the perfect dress. It's
really I did know this was coming.
Petersburg resident Chelsea Tremblay has been vaccinated for COVID before. She says she's getting this new booster to prepare her for the indoor winter months. And she works in retail.
I'm doing some traveling, and then I always see travelers where I work, so nice to feel set up for that.
Do you mind my asking if you've had COVID yet?
I had COVID this spring, and it was not my favorite experience, so I would like to both avoid it, but also, if that was how I felt with some layers of protection, I don't want to have experienced it without that, for sure.
Tremblay gets two shots, the Omicron booster in one arm and the flu vaccine in the other. Her nurse, Sharon Hunter, is happy with the clinic so far.
This has just been such a great response this morning. We weren't sure, since they weren't scheduled appointments, how many people were going to roll through the door, but
yeah.
It's been...
Well, and I didn't know I'd be able to get a flu shot, too, so that's really nice.
Several other people are entering the gym door for their turn. Tables and chairs are set up for check-ins and shots, and there's little waiting time. At a back table, nurse Jennifer Briner is unwrapping syringes and filling them with the vaccine. She says the local hospital and public health office teamed up for the clinic.
I wasn't sure what to expect because, you know, we're all a little tired of all of this COVID, but I'm really pleased. You know, it shows me that the community is informed that this booster is, you know, a new and improved different type. It's bivalent, so it protects against the actual strain that's circulating right now.
I fly a lot, and it doesn't hurt to be safe.
Adam Jackson has already gotten his shot. He's waiting on a folding chair for 15 minutes before he can leave the gym. He says he's had COVID already.
And when I did get it, it wasn't really that severe. And I was already vaccinated when I did get it. And I think because of the vaccination, it wasn't that severe. And it's the reason why I continue to get them now.
Sitting to his right is Ken Tolentino. He's in Petersburg for summer work in the cannery.
After working up here in Alaska, I usually go back home to the Philippines. So that's quite a ways from here. So I just want to be safe and, you know, feel protected.
Over a million people in the U.S. have died from COVID. The disease isn't as deadly as it was at the beginning of the pandemic, with more treatment options available now. But some people still get very sick.
I had to go into the hospital and get fluids and ended up with a secondary infection, had antibiotics, steroids, the whole shebang.
That's Ruby Shumway. She's one of the nurses at the clinic, but has personal experience with the disease. She got COVID in May.
Missed a lot of work and then finally was able to go back to the floor and had to take breaks all the time. Working out, my lips would turn blue. It was a very scary time. I'm a diabetic, so I knew that I was going to have a hard time fighting it, but it was unlike anything I've ever been through before.
These Omicron booster clinics will be happening all over Southeast in the coming month, says public health nurse Erin Michael.
I know Juneau is going to be doing them, Ketchikan, Craig, I believe Craig. Most of the cities that are at least a couple thousand or more people are going to be doing events like this for probably like the next month or so.
The five-hour Petersburg clinic distributed almost 300 COVID vaccines. They ran out of flu shots after 90, but plan to order more. Residents who missed the clinics can get vaccinated at their local public health office or hospital. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Well, the warmest days of the year are definitely in the rearview mirror. But don't be fooled by the falling leaves. There's still plenty of wild harvesting to be done on the Kenai Peninsula and beyond this autumn. KDLL Sabine Pooks spoke with a local forager about her tips for foraging this fall and storing that harvest for the colder days ahead.
The constant barrage of rainfall has come at the chagrin of a lot of Alaskans in South Central this summer. But Jenny Trissel of Homer says it's been awesome for Alaskans harvesting berries and mushrooms.
It's been great. The ferns are happier. The trees are happier.
Trissel has been foraging since her family moved to Alaska when she was a teenager. She says it's something that's brought her a lot of joy, especially at times when she's struggled to make ends meet.
I fell in love with the fact that I had resources at my hands, no matter what my circumstances were.
This year was Trissel's first, teaching foraging classes. She says she saw a mismatch between the food insecurity in Alaska and the bounty that the state has to offer.
If we're able to bring it back down to that simple, basic level, there's no reason for there to be as much food insecurity in this state as we have.
She's already wrapped up her last classes of the summer, but she says there's still plenty to harvest on the Kenai Peninsula come fall.
Even come this time of the year when everything looks like it's dying back, we have berries. We have hibiscus cranberries, we have rose hips, we have lingonberries, and we have crowberries.
Many berries become sweeter after the first frost. Trissel says the best place to search for highbush cranberries is old-growth birch forests. Right now, their leaves are bright red and are easier to spot. Lingonberries, or lowbush cranberries, prefer acidic soils in deeper mosses around spruce trees.
And they make the most beautiful Thanksgiving cranberry sauce ever. I haven't bought cranberry sauce in so many years.
Trissel says some berry leaves also make good teas.
We can honestly even find greens still at this time of the year, especially around maintained lawns and such, because things regrow more often. You can harvest your dandelion greens and your plantain greens and blanch them and freeze them just like you would a spinach.
She says she's also been picking pounds of mushrooms, like late season oysters and turkey tails. Turkey tails in particular grow on decomposing trees and have immune boosting properties. Trissel dries hers and uses them in teas as well. She does a lot of dehydrating.
When it comes to foods, you want to use a dehydrator because our lovely moist summer, especially this year, contributes to molds and other issues.
And the harvest doesn't stop when the cold sets in. Some medicinal plants like chaga mushrooms and usnea are ideally plucked in the winter. Springtime is best for fiddlehead ferns and fireweed shoots. Regardless of the harvest and of the season, Trissel says she tries to take no more than a third of what she finds.
That way it stays sustainable, and you can always go back and have a healthy patch every year.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service also has pamphlets on foraging available on their website. Tenaina Plant Lore by Priscilla Kari also catalogs the ways in which Tenaina people have been foraging in the area for generations. A free copy of that book is available online. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Claire Strempel and Yvonne Crumery in Juneau, Robin and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Chris Clint and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Angela Danning in Petersburg, and Sabine Pooks in Kenai. Our audio engineer is Dave Emmert, Katie Anastas is our producer. This is The Cranberries. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.